The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Across the southeast, you are listening to Beat on this Sunday morning, and the Irish Country Magazine are celebrating their 100th edition. You'll see it on newsstands with Tipperary's Rachel Blackmore on the cover. One of the articles within the magazine is about a new wave of confidence in women, and perhaps Irish women in particular. That's all about embracing their paleness. Adele Miner is the writer of this particular article for Irish Country Magazine, and she joins me on the grill this morning with more details. You're very welcome, Adele.
Thank you. Thank you.
Where do you stand on the paleness, Adele? Are you someone who is generally, would you even call yourself pale? Maybe all Irish people call themselves pale.
Yeah. I mean, there's a significant lack of sun in Ireland. So in the winter time, I most certainly am naturally pale. Mm-hmm. It would take me a while to kind of get a tan in summer, but I can get there if I lie in the sun long enough or leave Ireland to see the sun. But for the most part, I do wear fake tan throughout summer and winter. So yeah, this piece was more kind of a commentary on the movement that is happening to kind of put into people's minds that there are other options out there rather than being a slave to fake tan.
And it's interesting because I think we saw about maybe 4 months ago now, another Tipperary woman, you have Rachel Blackmore, of course, on the front of Irish Country Magazine, but another Tipperary woman, Roz Purcell, decided to ditch the fake tan. And, you know, the paleness was quite, you could really see it in her, but now it really suits her. I suppose you have to change your different clothes that you wear and the colours that you wear as well.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, Roz is a big kind of celebrity now in Ireland who's leading that movement at the minute. I think she recently celebrated 161 fake tan free days.
Wow, fair play to her.
Which sounds so dramatic, but you know, when you think about the relationship that women, and in particular Irish and probably UK women, have with fake tan, like, it is really a milestone and something that we depend on so much. Like I kind of mentioned in the piece that Ireland actually accounts for 60% of Penny's fake tan sales globally.
Wow.
And yeah, so that figure was revealed in their 2023 Pulse of the Nation Index. So, you know, the figure is quite high considering that Ireland has 5 times fewer stores than the UK does. But at the same time, it's probably unsurprising because I personally don't know anybody who doesn't wear fake tan, to be honest. Myself and all of my friends included do. So yeah, it is something that reaching 161 days like Rosanna Purcell did is a big milestone and a big celebration to be celebrated.
Now, tell me about this, because I don't wear fake tan, but I don't like the smell of it is one of the reasons. I said to you off air there that I get a tan very quickly, but that doesn't mean I got a tan on my legs. So I'm quite patchy. No, I quite like pale legs, but I feel that I just can't dedicate my time or my bed sheets to smelly cornflake smelling fake tan. So are you a constant fake tanner? Like, would you do it every few days or?
No, I wouldn't do it every few days. I don't like to be, I don't like the look of my pale skin, particularly in kind of winter time.
Oh,
but
okay.
I wouldn't say that personally I'm somebody who does it every single day or even every single week. I know there's Tan Thursdays is a thing that, you know, everybody bronzes up in their bedrooms on a Thursday night to go into the weekend. Yeah. And even if you're not going out on the weekend, just to kind of look nice. But I would now be someone who, when we get the random sunny day in Ireland unexpectedly, who would kind of panic and look at my legs because I want to wear shorts and be like, oh my God, and kind of scramble around to see what I could find.
And when did this start, Adele? Was this a school thing, a college thing?
Probably. I mean, it was just pretty like normalized. I think, you know, going to teenage discos and stuff in school, it would be, I know like the fake tan wipes were a big thing. And thankfully, I don't think are really anymore because they were horrific.
Yeah, terrible
so that
for
was
the environment.
Exactly. Like there's so many things and the streakiness of it all, the smell of it. Like it was just horrific. But like we've really seen, I think we've all kind of grown up around fake tan and it moved particularly. I turned 30 this year and I think I was kind of grew up in an age where it went from just a salon treatment that you would have to book in, you know, maybe in the early 90s and late 90s, it would be like a one-off that you're going on your holiday or a wedding is coming up, to then suddenly being accessible to everybody, that you could just pick it up in the shops and be bronzed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
whenever
true.
And wherever you liked. So it's really been that kind of normalized thing for me. But actually, while I was writing this feature, I thought, okay, let's challenge myself and let's be fake tan free for 2 weeks. So I did give it a go, and it was summertime. So, you know, I had my legs out. I was swimming and stuff. I was in my swimsuit because we had nice weather. And after like maybe 2 days, I was like, you know what? This is okay.
Okay.
I'm okay with this now. Yeah, I interviewed Molly Roberts, who's another kind of big figure in the movement in Ireland at the mm-hmm. minute, and she posts about going fake tan free on her Instagram and TikTok a lot. And I interviewed her for the piece, and she kind of said that it is really a gradual exposure to it, and you don't just kind of go cold turkey all of a sudden. It could be, you know, you decide to go fake tan free by just going to the shops if you're that reliant on it, and then you think, okay, I'll do it to the pub tonight, and then maybe you're able to go on holiday or to a wedding without it. And it's kind of that slow, gradual building up of changing your own mindset of how you feel within yourself, and to remind yourself that, I mean, who really made up that having a tan makes you more attractive?
Exactly.
Like, you know, we're responsible for that, so we can also be responsible for changing that mindset too.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have some tips as well for people who want to embrace, like you said, like going to the shops, maybe if you really are someone who tans a lot, like just trying it out for even a few hours, and products as well that people can try. You had that as well in the article.
Yeah, exactly. I think, like, if you are kind of ditching the tan, you can look at ways that you can make yourself feel better sans tan.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, just taking care of your body. You know, we put so many potions and lotions on our faces, and I am guilty of it myself, that I neglect my body sometimes. So things like, you know, dry body brushing, just being exfoliated all the time and moisturized, those kind of things can help you to feel better without the tan, that you look down at your legs or your arms or whatever, and you're like, well, I'm pale, but I'm really smooth and moisturized, and mm-hmm. that makes me feel good. So there's ways around it. And then also, if you wanted to kind of go down the more gentle route, by just using kind of bronzing powders maybe across your neck, if you're wearing something low cut, or kind of dry oils that have a shimmer in them, or, you know, even a gradual tinted tan, so it's kind of just a moisturizer that you're putting on that has a little bit of a color to it.
Yes.
Rather than, you know,
the full
really
on
plastering
yeah.
yourself with it. Yeah.
And did you go back to the fake tan after the 2 weeks off, or did you find you used
it
a bit?
Oh,
you did go back.
I did, but I did go to Glastonbury, so I just couldn't quite face a whole weekend of having my arms and legs out and no tan at all. But I'm
okay.
now back to having a natural tan from being there, because it was so warm. So I'm off the fake tan again now.
Sorry, so you went to Glastonbury, so you fake tanned for Glastonbury?
Yeah,
wow.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, and there was a lot of girls there. I was kind of scoping it out, and obviously there's a lot of Irish girls that go there too. But I think I noticed I could spot which girls were Irish and which girls weren't, because I felt like the girls who were Irish, I could tell from their fake tans if they were or not.
Wow.
Which is really funny. Yeah.
Wow, a really interesting conversation about especially the way us Irish women embrace it. Like you said, with pennies, most of pennies is sold to Irish people.
Yeah, 60%.
And like when you were thinking yourself or talking to Molly about it, is it the legs that people are mostly like, you know, conscious of?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. Like Molly kind of mentioned like the idea of looking sick, which is one big thing in my head as well. You know,
okay.
like naturally kind of dark circles. Yeah. So
yeah.
I think that idea of like, if people say like, oh, you're not well, and you're like, no, I'm just not wearing makeup or fake tan.
Right.
And then she also kind of mentioned the veins as well. You know, I think
yeah.
Irish women, we are on the translucent
yeah.
side of pale. You know, like people like Dita Von Teese has this gorgeous, you know, pale skin, and maybe it's a little bit different from mm. how we would view our own skin. Like I look down at my legs and I'm like, oh, look at these blue veins, look at this, look
mm-hmm.
at that. So yeah, I think those were kind of the two things that really seem to stick in people's minds the most when they think of themselves without fake tan.
Okay, wow, some really interesting conversations happening at Irish
yeah.
Country Magazine, and Adele Miner is the journalist who wrote that article about embracing your paleness or not. Like, it really is about what you want to do yourself, isn't it? But I suppose it's also
yeah.
the question of why you are doing it. Is it a confidence thing? And maybe you need to look at that a bit deeper as well. But you can check that out on Irish Country Magazine this month's edition. And it is the 100th edition, as I said. That's Adele Miner. Can people see your work anywhere? Are you putting it up on Instagram or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram. It's Adele Minor on there.
So check out how pale you think Adele. Oh, actually, you won't have any photos of you up there pale, will you?
No, probably not. I'm a con.
Well, Adele, thanks a million for talking to me on the Sunday Grill this morning.
Thank you. Thanks a mil.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's the Sunday Grill here on Beat, and let's talk about an interesting dance theatre show that's currently touring around Ireland. It's called Mosh, and it incorporates dance, theatre and music. And as the name suggests, it's about heavy metal music and the culture and moshing behind it. The woman behind Mosh is a dance artist who happens to be born and raised in the Southeast as well. Rachel Nebrainon joins me this morning on the Sunday Grill to tell us more about Mosh as it comes to Garter Lane in Waterford on July 10th and 11th. You're very welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
Not just born and raised in the Southeast, in Waterford.
Yes. Yeah. Just down the road from here.
So you're a dance artist. Is that how we term? So
that's the best way to explain it. Yeah. It's a very mixed bag of a job.
So tell us your journey to dance as a job. What did you do in college, for example?
I did a degree in dance.
Wow. Where did you do that?
Over in London in a school called London Studio Centre. And it was a multidisciplinary course. So I did acting and singing as well as lots of different styles of dance, which suited my personality quite well and has kind of lended itself well to the jobs I've ended up getting when
and
I graduated.
Like, was that just what you wanted to do from the start, or did you have a little light bulb moment while you were in secondary school?
I was about 12 when I decided it was going to be my job. So you can imagine I was a fairly determined young person. But yeah, I did Irish dancing as a kid, then into ballet by about 10. So yeah, about 12 years old, I was like, set my mind on it.
And was that all in Waterford that you did those
things? All in Waterford, yeah, in the De Bram School, which isn't here anymore. Okay. But that was an amazing space to be in, to grow up in. So yeah, went over to London when I was 19. And then once I graduated, I also trained in circus. So I became an aerialist for a couple of years until my body said, you need to stop now.
Oh, okay.
I did stop, more or less. I still do the odd job now and then. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's what I work in. I make shows and I also work on other people's shows, collaborating. And then I teach dance in Waterford City. And yeah, just the odd time perform still.
And you're based here in Waterford, as we said. Is in, you know, practically, is that a good idea, or is it more about your love of the sea, etc.? Like, would you be better off in London or Dublin even?
Yes, I lived in London for 7 years and I eventually admitted to myself that I missed the sea and I missed just the slower pace of life. So I could have come back and moved to Dublin, but I chose to come to Waterford and just see what I could do here and make it work. And honestly, it's the best decision I made. I've really gotten so settled here, and like, I still get to travel for my work and I still get to bring my work to different places. Like last year, we brought this show over to England, for example. So being here just means I can come back and rest in between all of the madness. And I'm also the dance artist in residence at Garter Lane Arts Centre, which is an amazing kind of support and base for me to make things feel like, you know, I can really make it happen here.
Yeah, and Waterford is so well known for the arts as well. So
yeah,
it is good that where you grew up has...
There's something special about here, yeah.
Yeah, totally. Let's talk about Mosh. It's your second show.
Yes.
Did you pitch it? How does this work in the world of dance?
Yes. The way it works often is that if you have an idea, you need to go and source the funding before you can start researching the idea. So that's what I did. I was actually initially supported by Waterford with the Green Room Awards. So that was the first little bit of support that I got, and it just built from there. It was during the pandemic, which was a weird time to try sort of research being in a crowd and being in a mosh pit. So a lot of it was done online, unfortunately, on my research. But I did get Arts Council funding for a project award to make the show in 2023. And then I'm after getting the Arts Council award for the touring award. And along with the Waterford City and County Council support, that's how we've actually got to bring the show on tour.
Okay, brilliant. So tell us about the show, like heavy metal and dance. You know, it should work, but you kind of think it's, it kind of competes against each other in one way, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And you see that a bit in how the dancers themselves have to mind themselves. We're doing a theatre version of a really risky thing. So there is definitely a contradiction there. But yeah, it's funny how it just dawned on me one day that's like, actually, moshing is a type of dancing. And I was very anti-moshing, to be honest, when I first started looking into it. So my boyfriend Luke was telling me about a time he got very injured in a mosh pit.
Imagine.
And that's how the idea came around, because we were having a debate about how foolish he was for getting in, that he was considering doing it again. And so I realized, well, there's obviously something to this. If he's willing to risk his body to do this thing, it must be really fun and there must be more to it. So,
and were you a musher or into heavy metal?
No, a little bit. I would enjoy a bit of punk, a little bit of rock, not really metal. I have come around to it quite a lot of, as you can imagine, 5 years of living with this show. I know the lyrics to lots of songs now, you know, but that's part of the reason I made it, is that it's not my world and I wanted to know more about it. And I think that served me well in that I'm not biased towards it. If anything, I was biased against it. Mm-hmm. And so I've actually really come in like examining the whole thing and absolutely convinced it's a brilliant thing and it's a beautiful thing that people do.
Explain, like, how would you describe moshing?
It seems to me that it is a natural reaction to the certain rhythm and energy that's coming from the band on stage or in your speakers. But yeah, on stage, it's that live element and it's impacting your body. And it's almost like people don't know what else to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. And so what you're seeing, if you were to just stand back and watch moshing, is people jumping and then banging into each other, pushing each other, mm-hmm. running in a circle.
And I always think, like, really using their heads.
Headbanging. Absolutely. Mm. Yeah. So yeah, it's just
so
letting
it
your energy out.
In a lot of ways.
Absolutely. It's really risky. Yeah. And in the sense that, you know, no one's trying to hurt anybody, but because multiple bodies are moving in multiple directions, just the physics of that alone, it can end badly sometimes. Just an elbow to the face or standing on a toe, anything like that. But it can be quite serious, especially if people do stage diving, which is less and less allowed, I think, but it still happens. Yeah, it's definitely a high risk activity. And that's something we explore, like in the show. Why do people want to take such serious risks? But it's kind of no different to like, a high risk sport, you know, like mountain climbing or motorbike racing, anything like that.
Yeah.
People enjoy risk and this is another form of that. It's quite a communal one. So you're with people when you do it. I often find that people are enjoying themselves laughing. You know, it's not, I think it can look like it might be an angry activity or people are being violent on purpose, but it's actually quite a joyful, funny thing to do.
I've never done the mosh pit. Have you ever done it?
I have. Not much now, but I have done it.
I think I'm too much of a nervous Nelly for the mosh pit. Like, I don't do roller coasters and I'd put mosh pit in the same
place
as that.
Yeah, I'm much more of an observer, but there's lots of different roles when it comes to moshing. You know, you could be the person on the outside who's sort of keeping the crowd in.
And that's good
important.
To know, because I do think it's, when you look at it from the outside, it does look like everyone is involved in that.
Yeah. No, it's for some and not for others. And I think when you're in that environment, you know to expect it and you can just kind of avoid it if you don't want to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But those who want to be part of it, you know, some people are maybe unconsciously going to a gig just to get to do that thing because it's such a release.
And is there a storyline behind your production as well? Are there characters in it?
Yeah, the way I think about it is that the five dancers on stage are kind of five archetypes of people you might see in a mosh pit. So we do get a little bit of an insight into their world and why they're there. They're speaking to the audience at different points. But it's not a sort of day in the life. It doesn't have a normal narrative.
Yeah,
it's much more like
a love story.
Exactly. It's much more like episodic and you're just kind of, we're opening up lots of questions and ideas and thoughts around the subculture and we're leaving the audience to sort of see what they feel about it by the end. It's up to them.
So it's quite choreographed then, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Very heavily choreographed. In fact, the dancers are absolutely incredible what they do in the space of the hour that we're there.
You weren't tempted to dance in it as well, were you?
No. I've made that mistake before of making my own show and being in it. It's really difficult
to be
both. And I collaborated with my friend Robin Byrne from Mullingar on this. So we've worked together before. So I had these ideas for the movement, but as the show started to get bigger and badder, I knew that I couldn't write it, direct it, and also choreograph the 5, 6, 7, 8 of it all. So Robin did that,
okay.
So she came in and we collaborated there on the show.
And how long is it then, the production?
About 55 minutes.
Okay,
yeah.
And is there an interval or anything? I can't imagine it would work with an interval.
It's straight through. It's sort of like you just go in and you immerse yourself in that space of time.
So something really different to do for the summer as well. And if you haven't seen a show that's based around dance as well, you're in Garter Lane on the 10th and 11th. Not too long now. Is it nice to bring it home as well?
It's great. And we kind of planned the tour on purpose. So we'll have been to lots of different venues. We're in Donegal and then down to Waterford for our last one. So, yeah, it's really a show for people who love music of any sort. People
and do you use any well-known music?
We don't actually. We have a live drummer and a live guitarist on stage.
Okay.
And it's all been sound designed and composed by the original designers and composers. Wow. So, yeah, it's really like it's a full gig experience as well as getting a bit of an insight.
Brilliant stuff. Well, garterlane.ie is the website if you want to check out tickets there. It is July 10th and 11th. So this week, in fact, if you want to try mosh and see that very choreographed dance show about heavy metal and the culture and community behind that. And Rachel, how will people get in contact with you about your dance lessons and things like you do like that here
Absolutely.
In
they
Waterford?
Could have a look at the Garter Lane website again if they wanted to have a look for booking. You can also go on my Instagram for this is Rachel Irish Name Work. That's how I, because their name is tricky. And there's also another Instagram page called Dancing Waterford for the classes.
Lovely stuff. Well, best of luck with everything. Thanks for coming into studio this morning. That was Rachel Nebrainon. The show is called Mosh. Gartalane.ie for tickets.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
It's The Sunday Grill. You're listening to Beat, and let's chat to my next guest because she's used her experience as a new mother to launch a community childcare app for parents. Mia Shepherd is the brainchild behind Play Days. That's Days with a Z. And it's all about connection and sharing childcare. She's going to tell us more about this interesting concept because she joins me on The Sunday Grill this morning with more details. You're very welcome, Mia.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Orla. It's a pleasure to be here.
I presume like people might hear this and say, oh, I've seen apps like this before, but this is a really interesting one because it's about community, really. And there's an awful lot of conversation these days about how we're almost missing that community aspect in the world now.
Yes. And it just seems to be such a desire amongst people, as far as I can see as well. Anytime I am on different social media platforms, I can see in all the mom groups and the parent groups, people reaching out and looking to meet up with other people. And, you know, there just didn't seem to be a centralized place for them to go.
Yes.
So that's one of the reasons behind the app.
Now, you're a new mum. Your baby is about one. Is that right?
She is. She just turned one last month. Yeah.
And are you living in the place where you grew up, or is it a new place that you're in?
So I've kind of bounced around a few different places in County Wicklow. But yeah, we didn't stray far. I've got my family all close by. Lovely. So I'm one of the lucky ones.
You are one of the lucky ones. But did your mindset change, or did you find like things changed once you had a child? What your desires were? Did that change for what you wanted from your area?
Yeah, I mean, look, I found that maternity leave can be quite a lonely time. I was, I guess, a little later to the game with having family than my friends. So they'd all had their periods of being off work and meeting up with each other and what have you. And, you know, I kind of didn't have that available to me when I was on maternity leave, which is one of the reasons that I did come up with this app, although the idea had been floating around in my head for a few years before I even got pregnant. So I could see, like I said, when I went online, that there was other people out there looking for a way to connect with other parents in their area as well. So it all kind of just led to this brainchild of Play Days.
So tell us a little bit about Play Days then. What's the idea behind it?
So Play Days is an app for parents. We've launched in Ireland first. Obviously, I'm from Ireland, but we do have plans to bring it to other regions soon as well. The format can work anywhere. And there's a few different ways that you can use the app. So firstly, you can use it to meet with other parents in your local area for joint play dates.
Okay.
So you can either go onto the app and put in details if you want to maybe go to the playground on Saturday, for example. You put in the details and you put open to all, and it basically goes out to other users in your area and they can accept and join your play date, and in-app messaging opens up, then you can communicate with each other. Or you can join a play date that somebody else has proposed. So it's nice and flexible that way. We don't share any contact details of anybody on the app. That's up to you to do with each other once you're communicating. Sorry, go on.
So you've launched this about 2 months ago. And what's the uptake been like? Like, have you had done the play date thing yourself or experimented with it?
Yeah, I'm actually meeting somebody on Monday. I'm very much looking forward to it. So it definitely works. I know that for a fact. The uptake has been really good. We've already got a few hundred people on there, which I'm quite happy about, considering we haven't done a huge amount of advertising on it just yet. So the feedback has been really positive from people that have heard about the app. They've said it's really needed at this time for the connection with people in your local area. You know, so many communities are growing at the moment and people are moving to new areas. So having something like this is a great way to meet with other parents in your new area if you just move to it.
Definitely. Talk to me about the free childcare share, because I think that's one that you have to kind of think about as well, whether you're willing to hand your child over for free childcare as well.
Yeah, so there's two different kind of ways of doing it on the app. One way is just childcare swapping with your friends. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to meet up with anybody you don't know, and you just add your own close friend, parent circle, people that you trust that have other kids, mm-hmm. and you childcare swap between you on the app. So there's a fair share algorithm included. Every 2 times.
Okay.
Yeah, so every 2 times you're requesting childcare within your own private friend community, you have to host or accept a request in return.
That's such a
so
good
it keeps
idea.
Things fair.
Yes, and a great idea rather than constantly having to ask maybe the friend that you know who'll always say yes, kind of just putting it out there and see who's available. So that's a great one.
Exactly. Yeah, everyone's got the same, I guess everyone's in the same boat that's going on there. You all know that you have to take turns, and it will also encourage you to go and do these things more. You know, if you've got a lunch coming up with friends and you don't want to bring your child along, pop the details in there. It'll go out to one of your friends to pick up. And mm-hmm. then you just take their kid and return another time.
Great.
And the kids are having play dates as well. So it's different to normal childcare. You know, at least you know your child is going to a house with kids that they know.
Yes, exactly.
So they can play together.
Yeah, rather than just putting it out there. And when you sign up for the app, there's what security is there? So you know that it's a real person with kids who's part of it.
So everybody that joins has to upload a government issued ID. Okay. So ideally a passport or a driver's license. And they're all checked manually. So only people that do that process have access to the features on the app and other users on the app.
Okay, good stuff.
Yeah, and there is also a daycare share option for school holidays, which mm-hmm. is for people that are interested in trying that, maybe that can't afford childcare during school holidays or all the expensive summer camps. You know, they can be extortionate if you're looking at more than one. Mm-hmm. Summertime, as you know, is a long period to fill. So we've also got this platform where you can daycare share with other parents in your town.
Okay.
The idea is that you're all grouped together. You're all sent your timetable 2 weeks before the holiday period commences. And again, in-app messaging is opened up between you. So you can all arrange to meet and you can all chat and vet each other in person before it actually takes place.
Good stuff. Well, if you want to have a look at it and see if there's people in your area, it is called Play Days, and that's Play Day and then a Z at the end of it. It is an Irish app. Lots of features in there for you to have a look at it. The brainchild is Mia Shepherd. Mia, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Thank you, Orla. It's been a pleasure.
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rapple on Beat 102-103.
Five Counties, One Station. You are listening to Beat. Let's do movies. Pixar's latest animation is called Elio. It's been called a sci-fi gem or a predictable movie from start to finish. It also marks Pixar's worst box office opening weekend of all time. So where does Brian lie in this conversation about Elio?
I'm currently lying in bed because I have COVID.
COVID number 5 for Brian.
Yeah.
We've been singing Mambo number 5. No, wait now. That's Mambo number 9, isn't it?
No, it's Mambo number 5.
Oh, thank God. Phew.
It's Mambo number 9.
I'll tell you about that song later. First, let's listen to this.
Your life isn't up there, Elio. You need to make friends.
I just want to belong somewhere.
So if any aliens are listening, please come and get me. Okay, bye, I love you. It's really happening.
We search the universe
for the dreamers and stargazers
like you.
This is awesome!
Are you gonna eat me?
What? Ew.
Oh, no, 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 my name's Elio. Well, what's your name?
No one's ever asked me my name before.
I'm Glordon.
Back home, I didn't fit in. I thought Earth was the problem. But what if it's me?
Well, I like you, and you seem fine to me.
I never had a friend before.
Me neither.
There you go. That's a clip from Elio. It kind of tells you everything. Little boy, can't make friends, a bit of a live wire, meets an alien. Ta-da! Go for it, Brian.
That's it. No, so it's basically this child who's obsessed with space, and then he gets moonbeamed, ice creamed up into a spaceship that gets brought off because they think he's the representative of Earth because his aunt, who works in a like NASA essentially okay. type thing, mm-hmm. He like basically uses that equipment, and they think he's the representative of Earth.
Ah, okay.
And he's brought to this intergalactic thing, and it's just. I don't know how you'd really describe it. He goes to hangs out with all these different aliens from all these different planets and stuff. It's kind of like, I don't know why the thing that pops into my head is the Lego movie, but it's kind of that, but like Pixar.
Yeah, and it looks cute. It's been called a box office flop. It took like nearly just over $20 million in the weekend, which is not a flop to me, but obviously is a flop to Pixar. But this is kind of Pixar's continuing problem, isn't it? They're not doing great at the moment.
Yeah, but I'll hit you with this, Orla. Did you know this film was coming out?
No, not at all.
Yeah, like it's kind of one I saw. I remember seeing a trailer for it, and I was like, okay. Do you know, like it's not anything, and it's interesting because the Pixar has gone from being this like generational company to being like, oh, okay. Do you know, and I. Good thing I'm not on the board of Pixar because I don't really know where they go with it. Because it was a fine movie. It was grand. There was some nice bits in it, but you never felt the way you expect to when you're watching a Pixar movie. Do you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Like, there's no feeling of
magic,
let's say Ratatouille or any of that. Like, you know that there's like it was a peak, but in all these peaks, when you look back on it, there's always like some person driving it behind the scenes or some creative vision or something behind the scenes. And I think with Pixar, it might be a case of it's gone from being the place that pushes a story so much and like that pushes the boundary of like animation and stuff so much to just we need to put out a new message, let's say. Because obviously it's about the aliens and it's all about like, oh, everyone's different and everyone's great. And there's, yeah, fantastic. But at the end of the day, if the movie's not good, the message is never really going to be shared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Do you know, like when I always think of Ratatouille as like anyone can be a creative person and creative, it doesn't matter where it comes from mm-hmm. and all that. Do you know, like that's, it was such an interesting message. And even Soul, I feel, because it came out in COVID, is like that's. I remember seeing it and being like, "Oh, this is good." But I always see edits of it on TikTok, and I'm like, "That was a really, really profound movie." Like, you know, and kind of went. And it's a case of. I think maybe it might have gotten too adult for the children audience.
Yes, I get you. Yes, and thinking too much about the adults that will be going to see it with the children. Yeah,
and I feel like it loses that bit of fun that let's say a Monsters Inc. or something would have had because it's like the reason the message was so powerful is because we didn't even realize we were being told a message. Do you know?
And, but this looks fun. It looks cute. But do you think it's a bit too worthy or something? Is that what you'd say?
Yeah, it's kind of a case of it just kind of became this massive thing of. Like he must join this alien alliance. He wants to join this alien alliance to get away from the world. And his parents died, and he has no friends. And it's a classic setup for an American.
It's definitely a classic trope for animation and movies in general. The aunt in this is Zoe Saldana, who you know has been doing amazing stuff this year. Won an Oscar as well, didn't she this year? But originally. He was meant to like have a mother, and that mother was America Ferreira, and then they decided to change this all around. So it's been kind of mired with issues and, you know, changes of storylines and stuff like that. And then America Ferreira couldn't do it because of her scheduling conflicts. So it seems to have been a different movie to start out with.
Yeah, and I don't know if this has benefited it then, because there's this whole thing about like kind of appreciating people for who they are. Honestly, that's kind of the whole message from it. So like, maybe that's the message. Maybe it was simple, but maybe it was like not as, not just, I don't know, the magic of Pixar is gone, I feel. It might be a controversial. Someone could be, come in like, this movie's changed my life, but I don't even know anyone else that went to go see this movie. So
yeah, we heard very little about it. In fact, the only thing I heard about it was that it was their biggest flop yet.
Yeah.
That was the news story that I got.
I don't know. Was it a case of the audience that goes and watches Pixar movies is different, maybe? Yeah.
And
because
remember,
I think the generation.
Pixar are the people who brought us up and Finding Nemo, Toy Story, you know, icons of animation.
Yeah, but I also feel like the people that saw that when it came out, like, were 10 years old, and now they're 30 years old, or in your case, late 70s. And the
I'll give you that since you're sick, Brian. But when you're back next week,
I think it's a case of the people that saw it as children are like, "Oh, this was profound for me." Still expect it to be profound, and I feel like that's why when I go and, you know, watch something, I watch it for entertainment the same way you would watch something. But maybe it's just the wrong audience type thing. But I've gone and seen other like kids movies, let's say Wild Robot, like DreamWorks. I always feel like was always aligned with Pixar in a way where Pixar was like, we want to be about like pushing the human condition. DreamWorks is always about like, let's just enjoy who we are kind of a thing. And I feel like when Pixar are like all about accepting people and let's appreciate everybody, it's like, I mean, that's what Shrek did in 2001. So I don't think it's pushing anything new realistically as well. Like, and I don't know. I just think something with Pixar is just missing, and it's not the same as it used to be, but also it's a different time and we're all different too. So maybe the real aliens was the friends we made along the way.
There you go.
You know?
Look, you're so deep with COVID. Let's give it some black puddings, please, Brian.
I'd probably only give it like a 5 or a 6, to be fair.
Okay. Well, listen, it's a long summer and there's plenty of children that need to be entertained, and Irish weather is unpredictable. So if you even wanted to bring a few kids, would they get a few laughs from it?
Yeah, there was bits where like there was, I did like enjoy it a bit. Like, you know, that's why I'm not saying that, hey, it's the worst movie I've ever seen in my entire life. But it's a fine movie. It's a grand movie. It's an afternoon passer.
Okay.
Know?
All right,
but,
that's what
know,
we call
the
it.
World where Fantastic Four and Jurassic World and all these Superman movies are coming out soon.
Yeah, and sure, even Lilo and Stitch is still available in kids' clubs across the Southeast. So there's lots of stuff there. Are you going to go for the 5 or the 6 black puddings?
I think in honor of the amount of times I've had COVID now, I'm going to go with 5.
Okay, good stuff. That is 5 black puddings out of 10 for Elio. It is available in cinemas as we speak. Brian, get well soon. I'll see you next week.
Maybe. Who knows?
The Sunday Grill with Orla Rappel on Beat 102-103.